Chapter 11. His Father's Father. They weren't at the Ivy Mansion, but out in the forest behind it. Drizzt led the way through the door of a small cottage, set within a small lea bordered by pines. Everything about the cottage, the construction, the furniture, the fire pit under a hole in the ceiling, spoke of economy and utility, which brought a curious look and a hmm from Zachnefane when he entered. "This," Drizzt explained, "is where I do my work." Zachnefane looked to Catti Bree, who merely nodded, then turned back to Drizzt, even as a howl drifted in from the open window. "Your work?" he asked. "There are cursed beings in the forest," Drizzt explained. "Werewolves. We call them Bitterdews, named after the unfortunate Bitterdew Harple, a wizard who began this brood, first with magic and then because, once he had cursed himself, poor fellow, he wasn't able to control his appetite."
"You kill wolves?" Zachnefane asked, his language a bit stilted and hesitating.
To this point, Catti Bree had been following up Evenel's work by casting Dwyamers upon the resurrected drow to allow him to understand the common language. Repeated use of these Dwyamers was known to have the side effect of actually teaching the language to the recipient, however, and so it was with Zachnefane already.
"Werewolves," Drizzt repeated. But Zachnefane shook his head in frustration, and both of them looked to Catti Bree.
The woman waved her hands and issued a chant, calling upon her divine Mialiki to grant Zachnefane once more the gift of comprehending their language.
"Werewolves," Drizzt explained when she was done.
"Lycanthropes? You kill lycanthropes?" Zachnefane asked, his command of the language obvious once more.
He considered it a moment, then added,
"Mercifully, I expect."
"I don't kill them," Drizzt replied. "I catch them and take them to the Ivy Mansion."
"We've a dozen in cells beneath the mansion," Catti Bree explained, "and some of our newer treatments and Dwyamers seem to be helping, if just a bit."
"Helping? You think to cure them? There is no cure for lycanthropy."
"And there never will be if no one tries,"
Catti Bree retorted somewhat harshly. Zachnefane stared at her then, long and hard, and his facial features softened as he did, just a bit, as if he was trying to find a different way of looking at not the lycanthropy issue, but his daughter-in-law.
"And we hunt this night?" he asked Drizzt, though he kept staring at Catti Bree. "Only if Gwenevar finds an opportunity," Drizzt replied. "And not we, but I alone."
That surprising exclusion turned Zachnefane away from Catti Bree to regard his son. He started to respond to Drizzt, not happy about being left out. But he stopped even as the first words left his mouth, for the name had registered, and instead he asked,
"Gwenevar?"
"Your son's oldest friend, who has been with him since he left Menzo Baranzon," said Catti Bree.
Zachnefane held up his hand to silence her.
"The cat?" he asked Drizzt.
Drizzt took the onyx figurine out of his pouch and held it up before Zachnefane's staring eyes.
"The Hunnut wizard's cat."
"She has been with me through it all," said Drizzt.
"Through it all? I should know some of this."
Zachnefane shook his head, frustrated. His resurrection had been successful, and most of his previous memories were as fresh as if he had not been gone for more than a century. But there were parts of his previous existence that seemed as if in a distant fog to him. He stepped back, and Drizzt called to the panther. Zachnefane remembered enough of the ways of magical figurines, even this one in particular, to remain at ease as the gray mist appeared in the small room, took the shape of a huge panther, and then became exactly that, a giant black panther, all muscle and claws and teeth.
"But one controlled wholly by the possessor of the statue," Zachnefane remembered.
And a good thing, too, for in those small quarters, neither Zachnefane, nor Drizzt, nor Catti Bree would have had a chance to fend off the powerful beast, and they all knew it.
"Gwenevar, we have a new friend,"
Catibri said hopefully when Gwen appeared. Guinevere turned to Zachnephane and sniffed. Zachnephane gave her an easy pat on the head, but he was watching Catibri. Realizing that she was trying hard here, with a feigned excitement in her words to the panther. Perhaps an old friend, Drizzt added, from another time. Zachnephane didn't miss that either, the particular emphasis Drizzt had placed upon the last two words. Indeed, Zachnephane felt as if he was from a time and place far, far removed from this. Guinevere nuzzled Drizzt, then moved over to sniff at Catibri in particular, as had become the norm for the panther. She gave a low growl, more of a purr, it seemed, and licked the woman's bulging belly. "The moon is almost full this night," Drizzt told Gwen, and when she looked his way, he motioned his chin toward the door. Guinevere understood, and out into the night she went. "There will likely be none about," Drizzt explained as the panther disappeared into the shadows, and Catibri moved to shut the door. "The moon is not quite full." "Then why bring her in?" Zachnephane asked. "Such items are limited in their use, yes?" "We are working on that," Drizzt replied, throwing a wink at his wife. Zachnephane looked at her curiously. "The Harples of the Ivy Mansion on the hill and I are doing promising research into Dwyamers that could safely extend Guinevere's time on this plane of existence each week. Each day, even," the woman explained. "And to show you, perhaps," Drizzt then admitted. "I am well, father. My life has been one worth living in ways I never imagined." "Like taking a human for a wife?" "That is no longer up for discussion," Drizzt said coldly. "She is my world, here and now and forever, as will be our child, our child." Zachnephane noted no room for debate in Drizzt's voice, so he bit back a stinging retort and heaved a great sigh. "I have much to learn," he conceded. "I hope that I can." He knew there wasn't much optimism in his voice, but he saw no way to remedy that. Catibri, who was also not smiling, started to respond, but Drizzt put his hand on her shoulder, silently bidding her to let him take the lead here. "I have walked a wondrous road, father," he said quietly. "I have seen things I could never have imagined, learned so much beyond the sphere of the Spider Queen and her matrons, and found love. True love." He paused to share a look with Catibri. "A partner to walk with me throughout this amazing journey." Zachnephane was trying to find a way to respond when Guinevere issued a long, low roar from out in the forest. "Werewolf?" Zachnephane asked hopefully, thinking this might be just the thing to get him away from this unbearable tension and unanswerable dilemma. "So it would seem," Drizzt replied. He glanced at his wife, who nodded, then gave her a quick kiss and took his leave. Zachnephane, suddenly alone with his daughter-in-law, then realized that perhaps the cat's interruption wouldn't be the reprieve he desired. Catibri walked past him and closed the door behind her husband. She moved to the table and cast some spells, conjuring a feast to fill the bowls and wine to fill the goblets. "Sit," she bade Zachnephane. "Drizzt will not be long." He looked at her, trying not to be suspicious. "Sit," she said again, more commandingly. "It is past time that you and I had a talk."
"A blunt one?"
he said with a snort. "An honest one," she answered dryly. Zachnephane walked over and took a seat, then said, not hiding his condescension,
"I feel as if I am about to be scolded."
"You are about to be informed if you'll listen, not scolded."
"They are often one and the same. Perhaps human women are not so different from the drow matrons after all."
He said it with a grin, but Catibri was clearly not buying into such a comment as a good-natured jab. "I expect that you are about to learn the choices before you," Catibri answered. "What you do with those choices will be up to you, not me, and not Drizzt."
"The choices from your perspective?"
"No."
the story of who Drizzt has become, from the day I first met him on the slopes of a mountain called Kelvin's Cairn to now. His has been an incredible journey since his arrival on the surface of Toril, and I have been beside him for most of it. So I will tell you, and I'm sure Drizzt will tell you when he returns. With that knowledge, your choices, whatever they might be, will be more informed.
My choices about what? Zaknafane asked, sitting back and studying the surprising woman more carefully.
About everything. Everything to do with your son, at least.
You fear my opinion, she snorted, and Zaknafane was surprised at the sincerity of her retort. This one was confident in her position here. That gave him pause. She began her tale.
Zaknafane ate and drank, but he listened, and quite intently.
Another meeting of three was taking place to the west of Long Saddle, in the grand chambers, physical and extra-dimensional, of Gromph Beanrian Luskin. Two female drow circled about the wizard, staring at him unblinkingly, measuring him, trying to get into his thoughts and seeking any clue at all. No drow other than the matron mother herself would ever attempt such a stare at Gromph, but these two were not actually dark elves. They only made themselves look that way to strong effect for their actual appearance. The half-melted candle of mud form of a Yoklul would keep any drow with whom they spoke far more on his guard. Not that Gromph had any illusions about the nature of his guests.
"What have you learned of Zaknafane's return?" Ikardaria asked, her voice husky and suggestive, magically so.
Gromph snorted at that effect, as if such a minor Dwyamer could entrap him, even if issued by one who often stood beside the Spider Queen.
"Nothing," the wizard replied.
"Zaknafane has been reunited with his son, though I don't know the outcome of that circumstance."
"They accept the return of Zaknafane?" asked Escavidney.
"What is to accept? He is here."
"And they are not curious as to why or how?"
the handmaiden pressed.
"Of course they are, Jarlaxle."
"Ivanel?"
Ikardaria interjected. "Ivanel too," said Gromph. "They inquire wherever they may. They asked me if I had learned anything upon my return from Menzo Berenzon."
"And you told them?"
Ikardaria asked, rather sharply. Gromph shrugged as if it hardly mattered.
"Told them what? That all believed it to be truly Zaknafane Doerden resurrected? Yes. But that is nothing they could not have easily discerned on their own."
"Perhaps they wished to learn of the news from Menzo Berenzon, to discern if suspicion of the resurrection was falling upon them," Ikardaria reasoned. But Gromph just snorted in response.
"Zaknafane is here, however it happened," the former archmage said. "This is the new truth of the region, but it is only one."
"Tell us others," said Escavidney.
"The dwarven gate between Gauntlegrim and this very tower, and the one between Gauntlegrim and the Ivy Mansion, are operational, and working even better than I would have thought possible. King Brunner will have a third portal in place within a 10 day or three, connecting Gauntlegrim to Mithril Hall. When that is working, it will allow him to bring in material and soldiers from the Silver Marches at a moment's notice, putting Brunner closer to becoming untouchable by the petty humans of the Sword Coast, unless they desire a war with the entire race of Delzoon dwarves. It is quite impressive."
"And the Host Tower?"
asked Ikardaria, apparently unconcerned by the goings-on of the dwarves.
"So be it.
Look around you. Have you seen anything on the material plane to rival this magical creation, other than Chadnasad's Web City, perhaps?"
The handmaidens looked at each other, grim-faced but with clear intrigue.
"I share your interest," said Gromph, "this act of creation with the primordial. I have learned its name to be Megara. Holds wondrous promise for us all. I am your eyes and ears here."
Ikardaria arched a delicate eyebrow at that, indicating that her trust level regarding Gromph Beanri was not as high as he was pretending with that statement. But indeed, what choice did she have?
"Should we fear to allow the dwarves this power?" Escavidney asked.
As clearly, she didn't share Ikardaria's indifference.
Will they send the armies of the north crashing against Jarlaxle and Luskin? Will King Brunner bring in his kin from the Silver Marches to swarm the Underdark all the way to the City of Spiders? Even El holds within her the keen pain of King Brunner's keener axe, Ygardaria reminded. For it was this same Brunner who had split the skull of Ivanel the Eternal.
Even if she didn't, I do not foresee such adventurousness in Brunner, not for conquest at least, Gromph answered.
Has your time hiding among these Ibliths softened you?
The former archmage cast an amused expression at Ygardaria. He understood her added cynicism and anger here. The treachery of Ivanel had defeated Ygardaria and banished her to the lower plains. Only the great weakening of the Faerzris and the intervention of Loth herself had allowed this particular handmaiden to walk the lands of Faerun once more. And more than anything else, the proud demon Yoklo's pride had been punched, as she had been punched quite literally by the human Grand Master of Flowers.
What other events will you report, servant of Loth? Escavidney asked, ignoring her fellow handmaiden's question, as Gromph did. He actually chuckled at that.
Intrigue with the Lord Protector of Neverwinter, as usual, he answered. There are some strange stirrings, but not worthy of your time, at least not yet.
We would not have King Brunner allied with him, Escavidney made clear. You must not allow it.
Hardly a worry.
Jarlaxle will monitor and we will know.
You can know already, Gromph assured her. The dwarves of Gontalgrim hate Daggled Neverember, and the feeling is quite deep and quite mutual.
The handmaidens again exchanged those interested glances. Do not think for a moment that enmity is an opening for any of Menzo Berenzon with the Open Lord, Gromph insisted, making certain his tone conveyed the depth of his urgency. Lord Neverember is a bothersome idiot, and would be more trouble than gain, do not doubt. He is an open lord of Waterdeep, is he not? Surely he has allies, Ygardaria said.
Gromph conceded the point with a shrug.
We are watching those allies.
And they are? The impatient handmaiden demanded.
A Waterdavian noble house, Margaster, Gromph admitted.
He was surprised at the twang of guilt that accompanied those words. Since when did it bother Gromph to think himself acting against the best interests of Jarlaxle and these strange companions with whom the self-serving fool had surrounded himself? Still, he was walking the fine line and giving away information that could be had elsewhere anyway, and that would not be too detrimental to his adventurous brother.
No matter, he thought, and he dismissed the whole notion out of hand. These were emissaries of Loth herself, and as in Menzo Berenzon, Gromph would do what he needed to do to continue his work here and now, work that had become so precious to him once more with the inclusion of his training in psionics. Primary among Gromph's priorities was self-preservation, something he thought more likely by staying on the good side of Loth.
Hoofbeats outside the cottage alerted them of an approach, and Catti Bree, who had nearly finished her tales of Drizzt, moved over and peeked out the small window.
It is Drizzt returned, she told Zacnafane, and then added with a smile, I warn you now, keep your sword sheathed, both of you.
He drew first, Zacnafane replied, as lightheartedly as he could manage.
I let you have your squabble last time, though I'll be a 10 day of 10 days replacing the broken things. But sometimes one must let children learn their own lessons, I suppose.
Children?
Catti Bree held up her hands and shrugged, letting the comment stand. Zacnafane, however, couldn't ignore it.
Good lady, where I am from, children who battled as we did in the house proper would have been disciplined at the end of a living serpent on a priestess's scourge.
Where you are from?
Catti Bree asked with an arch smile.
You mean where the superior race lives?
Zacnafane started to respond before he had fully digested that remark, but just surrendered and even chuckled. The cottage door opened and Drizzt entered. He unstrapped his weapon belt and hung it on a hook beside the door, almost as if he had heard the previous conversation. As he did so, he looked curiously at his wife, then to the chuckling Zacnafane.
Things are well? He asked.
Werewolves?
Zachnefane asked, still not quite sure how to answer that seemingly simple question.
Drizzt shook his head.
We thought we had the trail of one, but no.
Caddybri motioned to a chair at the table, then took her own seat. I was telling your father of your life since our days running the foothills of Kelvin's Cairn, she explained. From my perspective, of course. I am sure he would like to hear it from you.
Zachnefane felt Drizzt's questioning stare fall upon him.
I would, he confirmed.
And he wasn't lying. The human woman had, surprisingly, given him a lot to think about, and perhaps hearing the same stories from his son's perspective would help him better appreciate her words and feelings. The three remained at the cottage long into the night, with Drizzt telling his story, from Kelvin's Cairn to Mithril Hall, of all the places in between and all the places beyond. He paid particular attention to one tale that Zachnefane couldn't help but appreciate.
I returned to Manzo Berenzon, Drizzt explained, openly and in surrender. I gave my life so that you would not have to do such a thing,
Zachnefane interjected, and he didn't try to hide his anger about such a ridiculous choice.
I had to, Drizzt explained.
You thought you had to, Caddybri interjected, to which Drizzt nodded.
They hunted me, imperiling those I came to love, Drizzt said. I could not allow that.
Those who loved you would rather die beside you than have you give yourself to House Bayenri, Caddybri insisted.
That raised Zachnefane's eyebrow.
Do tell, he said to Drizzt. All of it. This is a tale your wife seems to have forgotten.
Drizzt laughed at that, which surprised his father.
She alone came for me, he said. She was no great priestess at that time, nor even a wizard, though now she is proficient in both the arcane and the divine. She was a fighter, and not yet one of great experience even. He cast a glance at his wife, one full of love. But she came, alone. She walked the ways of the Underdark all the way to Menzo Berenzon, and there, with the help of another human, a man you will soon meet if you have not already, she got me out of the dungeons of House Bayenri. Zachnefane started to laugh, but he bit it back as he realized that his son was not joking.
From Bayenri? He asked incredulously, and Drizzt nodded.
A good bit of luck, Caddybri admitted.
I doubt it not. When was this? Zachnefane asked.
60 years ago, perhaps, said Drizzt. Not so long after King Brunner retook Mithril Hall.
Zachnefane nodded, but then realized a great inconsistency here when he regarded Caddybri.
You cannot be more than 40 years of age.
Caddybri snorted at that.
I am not halfway through my 20s, but thank you for that, I think.
But you just said, the flabbergasted Zachnefane said, looking back to Drizzt.
That is another story. One as remarkable as your own, Zachnefane, Caddybri answered, and one for another day. It is late. The moon has set. Let us return to the Ivy Mansion and warm beds.
She rose and began collecting her things, and Drizzt did likewise. Zachnefane, who was wearing everything he had brought out to the cottage, remained seated and finished his drink, watching the two moving about, and watching, most of all, the way they looked at each other. He tried to minimize his occasional winces and to keep the scowl from his face, but even with all he'd heard that night, he didn't think he was very successful at either.
Well, that was much more pleasant, Caddybri said when she and Drizzt were alone in their rooms at the Ivy Mansion. And we don't need to build a new table.
Drizzt didn't share her mirth.
He hates you, he said.
He doesn't hate me.
He hates that we are together. He hates most of all that we are having a child, a half-breed that he will not accept.
Fear can lead to hate, but they are not the same, Caddybri said. Your father has no experience in a multitude of friendly races and cultures, and this world, a world and time where such a thing as our baby could occur, have been thrust upon him so jarringly.
Zachnefane is no child, Drizzt replied, nor is he the man I...
You keep calling him Zachnefane, Catty Bree interrupted. Not father, but Zachnephane. Why?
Drizzt didn't answer, but he considered the valid point.
Zachnephane's not the only one who's afraid, Catty Bree added.
She knew him so well, Drizzt thought. He was afraid, indeed terrified.
Zachnephane had been a symbol to him more than a real person over the last century and more. He had idolized a memory because he never had to worry about the reality of who Zachnephane, removed from Menzo Berenzon, might be. It was so much easier to just project his own feelings and beliefs onto the ghost of the man.
People are complicated, and people change, Catty Bree said. Look at Artemis and Trary.
Drizzt's audible gasp at that gave his fears away, he knew, when Catty Bree looked at him more intently.
Have patience, my love, she said,
moving near to him and massaging his shoulder. Drizzt nodded. What choice did he have, after all?